My name is Lori Bauer, and I'm with the NVC Academy, and I want to welcome you to Naturalizing the Language of NVC with Mickey Cashton.
Thank you. Welcome to everyone. What I would like to do is to do a little review in which I will invite you all to participate. And here's what I would like you to do. First, I would like you to name what an insight or a learning or a key practice that you got from last week's call. And then if, actually it could be either or share something that you did with what you learned, where you were able to apply what you learned last week. And I'd like to hear from a few people who would like to share either an insight, a learning, a tip, a practice that you got from last week, and or some way that you put your learning into practice that was helpful.
The thing that I heard that was valuable to me was it actually was a way to express in words a feeling that I had when I was trying to use NVC, and that is, when we jump into empathizing with another too quickly, I say too quickly before we actually check in with ourselves, it can almost put the person on the defensive that we're trying to communicate with. Mm-hmm. They might feel that we're trying to analyze them or something. I never heard it expressed like that, but that was very valuable for me to hear that, and I understand how that happens, and I think that people hate to be analyzed. I just want to avoid that.
Thank you. I want to just add one more sentence just to reground that learning about why that happens, why it is that when we jump to empathy, that can happen. And there are two reasons that I'm aware of. One is that often we jump to empathy as a way to keep ourselves protected. So instead of going to a place of vulnerability, we protect ourselves by going to empathy and kind of like put a pressure on the other person to be vulnerable first. And so there's that pressure. There's also a kind of inauthenticity that the other person feels because we are clearly going on top of our feelings. And the third thing is that in a way we didn't really have an agreement with the other person that we're talking at the level that empathy is. And so it's kind of like respect for their autonomy would invite us to a different flow. Thank you. And Pat?
When I reviewed everything on the tape, the thing that really struck me again was the idea of actually having our honesty be expressed empathically, holding care for the other person as we were speaking honestly, because one of the questions that clarified for me was when to use honesty and when to use empathy. It helped me realize that in some ways, as you said, at a deeper level, they can actually be the same thing. And that really, really gave me some clarity in an area that I had been struggling with.
Thanks. And Nancy?
For me, what stayed with me immensely was first getting into the presence, into the loving consciousness of caring for the other's needs with the same care and presence I have to my own needs and
mm-hmm.
what's alive in me. And from that space, the words follow.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. So then I want to introduce the topic for today, and that is a focus on one of the aspects of what makes the NVC form of speech, what gives us a bad reputation. I don't know how many of you have encountered this, that there are some people, when they hear NVC, they make a face because they've had experiences with someone talking to them in funny ways. So one of the aspects of the funny ways that we talk has to do with the fact that we focus on feelings and needs. Really what I want to do today is two things. I want to focus first on making a distinction between where we focus our attention and what words we use. They don't have to be the same. In other words, it's like we tend to think that the only way to talk about feelings and needs is to say that we're talking about feelings and needs. And if we don't say it, then we're not talking about feelings and needs. And that's not my experience. My experience is that I can focus my attention on feelings and needs and talk a language that is based on my intuitive sense of the comfort level of the other person. This entails two aspects. One is I simply remove the word feeling and the word need from my vocabulary, even though I put my focus on them. And the second is the exercise, which is to look at the lists and adapt your feelings list and needs list to the occasion or to the particular cultural context or the type of people or whatever it is where you are in interaction. That's it. This is exactly what we're going to focus on today. And so I want to now open it up first to a few questions, and then I'm going to send you to do an activity in pairs. I'd like to know if anybody has any questions or comments about this notion of separating the focus from the words.
My question revolves around relationship between something you just said and an understanding I have from Dr. Rosenberg's work. And if you could help me clarify, that would be great. If a person is talking and they're not speaking in terms of feelings, they're saying, I feel that, and then they go on.
Mm-hmm.
Or I feel, and they use misunderstood or words that imply intention of another person. My question is, in terms of reflecting back, we still not best in terms of connection, and I guess I'm asking this, if we stay away from reflecting back, so you feel that. In other words, we don't confirm that their thought is a feeling. Is my question clear, Mickey? Or?
I think the question is clear. Let me elaborate on what I understand from your question, even things that you didn't necessarily say. In some ways, the closer I stay to the person's frame of reference, the more likely they are to recognize themselves in my reflection. That's, I think, the one end of it. On another end of it, I want to stay in integrity with my own beliefs about the world that, you know, I feel that is not really a feeling. I feel misunderstood, or I feel that he cheated me, whatever, is not a feeling in the way that I see the world. How do I balance these two? Did I get you?
Yeah. Yes, it's exactly what I'm talking about.
Great. So here's what I'd like to say about this. There is no science here. It's a lot of trial and error in terms of learning to aim for a very particular point. And you'll fail and fall on your face and get up and keep going until you have it. And here's the point that I'm aiming for. I'm aiming for a place where I speak in complete integrity and I give back to the person something they can recognize as themselves. That's one aspect of it. I want to distinguish between my integrity and some knee-jerk idea that it's my job to educate this person about how to speak. Do you feel the difference?
Oh, yeah. Yes, I do. Yeah.
And that indeed, as you pinpointed, one of the things that people are kind of like irritated about in relation to NVC people, that we walk around like it's our job to educate the world. It also takes form that I think came up in one of the exchanges that we had last week, which is that somebody comes to us, let's say, with a conflict with another person. And instead of offering them empathy and understanding for their experience, we tell them that it's their job to empathize with the other person. So we tell them exactly what we're not doing. I know that this is not what you were saying. I'm just connecting it because it's kind of like related. It's kind of like the NVC habits that turn people off. So back to your question. Okay, I'm gonna put it on you to work it out. And here I am, I'm saying, I feel completely misunderstood. The first question that I have to you is, do you have a sense that you understand what I said? let's say I'm telling you about my relationship with my boss. And I'm saying, you know, my boss said da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and I feel completely misunderstood. Let's not make it more complicated where it's an issue between us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you know what I mean when I say that I feel completely misunderstood, right?
Yes. Well, let me tell you what I'm hearing. What I'm actually taking in is that she's not feeling understood. In other words, I'm not putting in my own mind, I'm not putting the blame on the other person.
Yeah. Before you even do any kind of translation, just on the basic human heart level, when I say my boss said blah, 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 and I feel completely misunderstood, do you have any difficulty grasping my experience?
No.
That's it. You don't. I want that to be your guidepost, not the correctness of the language that I use or you use. Just the basic human connectedness. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
And still, I don't want to necessarily feed something that I don't believe in. So then the question is always the same question. How do I convey my intuitive, gut-level, easy understanding of this person's experience of feeling misunderstood in a way that is in integrity with my own way of seeing the world? How would you do that? That's what you're struggling with.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see if anybody has a suggestion. I think if you all find it rather than me feeding it to you, it will stick more. Anybody has any suggestions? How might you do that? How might you convey the basic gut level intuitive empathic understanding that you have in language that will be easy for this person to recognize without educating them and without compromising yourself?
To say, yeah, I really get it. It matters so much to you to be understood or to for him to get it.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's hear Cindy's.
Actually, it was very similar to what she just said. I was going to say, so you really want to know that your boss gets you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, both of these, Pat, first of all, does that sound fluid to you?
Very much so, yes.
Notice that in both cases, they didn't even bother to say anything about feeling. They only went to the need, to what the person wants. And I want to say that in most cases, except when there is, you know, a clear sense that we are here for a healing session that is explicitly so, where it's hard for the person to access their feelings or where there's so much feeling that you want to make room for the feeling, almost always connecting with what the person wants is so much more important than trying to name what the right feeling is. Almost always, skip the feeling, go to the need. And make sure you don't use the word need. You notice that neither one of them said anything about need. So what they did, kind of like the classic move that they made, is they took what the person said as a feeling, heard in it what the need is. Because whenever somebody expresses a thought instead of feeling, it gives you information, direct information about the need. Much more so than the feeling. The feeling you would have to infer, the need is almost always right there. Especially if the person uses a judgment or a done-to kind of feeling, like misunderstood, disrespected, criticized, attacked, all of these things directly give you the need. Can you see that?
Yes, very much. That was so helpful. Thank you.
Complete with your question?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Any other questions about this fundamental idea of focusing on feelings and needs without using those words and with adapting the language to meet the person where they are?
My question has to do with my daughter, who's 19. So I'm wanting to have connection with her, but what do I do when I can tell what she really, really wants me to do is just compliment her? What do you do with that? Do you just do that? I mean, even though, you know, everything that I hear from Marshall is that these compliments are about judgments, and so, how do you manage that? I'm a little confused there.
Okay, tell me what she says that lets you know that she wants a compliment. Whatever the example is, I just want you to focus on what does she say that leads you to believe that she wants a compliment.
Okay, Mom, how do I look?
Okay, and what's the difficulty in telling her your experience as you look at her?
Oh, I don't struggle with it. I just question around if I just say, "Oh, sweetie, you look really pretty."
You don't have to say it like that. That's not your experience. That's evaluating her.
Right, and that's what I'm trying to figure out.
How do you speak about you rather than about her?
Ah, so you're saying respond from my experience rather than what I'm sensing that she's wanting from me?
I mean something else. Rather than saying you look pretty,
yeah,
you'd say I really enjoy this dress.
Oh, okay, so using my own experience.
Exactly.
When she's asking the question about how, like, she looks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's one thing you can do is, like, be completely honest about your experience. You know, I really like the dress, and I personally wouldn't wear these shoes. Or that, you know, if that's what it is, like, be really honest. Or you can connect with her about what she wants. Instead of giving it to her, you can connect with her about it.
Could you say more about that?
Yeah. What do you think is going on for her?
I think she's wanting some reassurance that, you know, she's okay. And
just ask her that. Okay, I'm your 19-year-old. Just tell me.
Is it that you're wanting some reassurance that you are pretty?
Okay, there you go. So now you're connecting without saying or not saying. She may not like it, but you are aiming for connection.
Okay, well, I just have the story that connection is she wants me to just, you know, she doesn't want me to use needs words or feelings words. So, okay, but I can do this coming.
Did you say need?
Yeah.
Then don't. Say want. This is one of the most fascinating things. If you say want instead of saying need, it's less difficult for people to hear it as normal flow of words.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. So this is a very nice segue into the activity that I would like you to do. What I would like you to do is to pair up, and then in your pair, the activity that I want you to do is to go back and forth like this. One person chooses a feeling word and a need word. And the other person finds a way to say a sentence, a flowing sentence in English that doesn't have the word feeling or the word need in it. Let's demonstrate it. Who would like to give me a feeling word and a need word?
Excitement and adventure.
Excitement and adventure. Okay, so if I was going to speak purely classical NVC, let's say I'm doing expression, I would say something like, I am feeling excited because my need for adventure is going to be met. And if you were going to speak like this to anyone, they were going to look at you like, what is the matter with you? Do you need people with a nice white coat? So instead, if I said, you know, I'm really excited about the upcoming adventure that I have, I'm good. No one's going to have any difficulty with it because I didn't use the word feeling and I didn't use the word need. Let's do another example.
The feeling is sad and the need is companionship.
Okay, so the classical would be, I'm feeling sad because of my need for companionship. And again, that sounds stilted. Saying, you know, I so much treasure it when I have companionship in my life, and I'm really sad right now not to have it. Simple. Doesn't it sound better?
Yeah, it sounds way better.
Okay, so that's what I would like you to play with. And you will just go back and forth, and you could do expression or you can do empathy. Either way, it doesn't really matter. And in fact, I'd like you to try both so that you get a sense of where the fluidity comes from. One aspect of it is removing these two words. And in terms of removing the word feeling, that's really easy. You just remove it. You never lose anything by saying, I am sad or are you sad, instead of saying, I am feeling sad or are you feeling sad. You just get the word feeling out and you don't lose any meaning. And then in terms of the word need, there is a host of things that you can say to replace it. So let's just get you to practice your imagination. What can you say instead of need? Something you can say instead of need.
Value.
Okay, so I value or do you value instead of I need or do you need? Okay.
Long for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is one of the places where the question of the context is important. There are contexts in which you can get away with long for, and there are contexts in which you don't. Mm-hmm. If you're talking to your therapist, absolutely you can say I long for whatever it is. If you're talking to your boss, might be weird.
Yeah, how about care about for my boss?
Okay, great.
I was thinking I'm missing or I'm lacking.
I would stay away from those. Because one of the things that we want to do is to shift from thinking of need as lack to thinking of need as an energy that moves towards fulfillment. In other words, when I say, I'll give you an example. If I say I have a need for integrity and I say I value integrity, I care about integrity. I want integrity. It's all good. If I start saying I lack integrity, I miss integrity, then it sounds strange, right?
Absolutely. No, I see the difference.
Thank you.
Something is important to me or it matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
I desire something or I'm hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
Would like to have, like I would like to have more of something, more relaxing.
Yeah. I am really enjoying the creativity.
I really want.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay.
I really love it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I wish.
I wish for whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh.
I just want to live in a world where there's more.
And again, that would fit in some context and not in others. You know, I'm just trying to imagine you talk to a fast-paced person who is kind of like very results-oriented. They wouldn't know what to make of you. You see that or it doesn't make sense to you?
No, I do. I mean, if I imagine saying that to the chief financial officer, my organization, I think he would look dazed.
Yeah. So some things are very cross-platform, and some things are more specific to context. Okay, there is two more.
Do you have a sense of, and then I would put a need after that.
Put it in a sentence for me because I'm not computing it yet.
Do you have a sense of harmony? Do you have a sense of peace? Do you have a sense of relief?
Okay, got it.
Like kind of a sensation, like or completeness or...
Okay, thank you. You get the final word.
It would make me so happy to...
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And now I'd like you to go play in a moment. And I just want to know before we go play if anyone has any questions before you would know what to do in your group. Yes.
I'm not sure if this is the right time to ask this, but just because it was brought up that it would make me so happy, I'd like to ask you about using the word something or other makes me or something or other makes me have action or whatever.
Yes, it again, that balancing act between is flow and am I conveying something that is aligned with my philosophy of life. And depending on context and situation, I may choose to appear to compromise my language for the purpose of having more flow.
I get it. Thanks.
I only do it when I'm consciously choosing that that's what I'm doing and I know why. I'll give you an example. I mean, this is not about the same exact thing, but it's still an example of the same principle. Some years ago, I had conflict with an ex's new partner who had no knowledge of NVC, and it was really intense. And she finally agreed to have mediation. And there was an NVC person who mediated between us. There was nothing that this person accepted as reflection except verbatim saying her words back to her. Everything mm-hmm. else, she kept saying, no, you're not getting what I'm saying. And so the mediator ended up choosing to reflect back exactly the same words. The person relaxed. Mm. And then she chose to say other things in addition. But insisting on translating in a moment when the person doesn't see it as connecting is interfering with the deeper intention of NVC, which is to create a flow of connection between people that allows us to resolve conflicts and share resources. Got it?
Thank you. Yes.
All right. So I would like to give you 10 minutes to play with this. And usually when people do this activity, they find it really fun. You can be as playful or as serious as you want. You can play. Some people like to play by giving an incongruous combination of feeling a need just for the fun of it. Do whatever works for you to both enjoy yourself and get your tongue to practice saying things differently. Enjoy yourselves and be back with you shortly. Hi. So now I would like to open it up to questions and comments about this activity, and then we'll see where that takes us and when we can handle the specific list of feelings and needs that hopefully some of you prepared ahead of time.
What I noticed with my partner was that without the context, it was a bit more difficult. It was easier when we both had, she shared just a little bit of context with me.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just a feeling word and a need word, it was more difficult.
What did the context give you?
The context gave me an intuitive knowing. The context allowed me to know what her experience was more clearly.
Oh, so you made it real, like an actual feeling and need that were real for her or for you?
Yes. My understanding was that the giver was stating a feeling and a need, and then the receiver would give back that feeling and need in different words.
Correct, but it didn't have to be anything that was relevant to your experience. You went deeper with it, I think, than I intended. I intended it to be just a linguistic flow practice, which is fine. I think you probably ended up getting a lot of benefit from doing it this way. I'm grateful for this so that I will know to fine-tune the instructions next time, if I remember, of course.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The comment that I have actually is related to what the person who just spoke mentioned. And we didn't go into specifics. Scenarios. We just, you know, out of our heads, picked words and feelings and needs. But what I found myself doing to get more colloquial with whatever the words might be that I chose was to actually imagine possible.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That
was a big help.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the other thing I wanted to mention, we related to something that I re-listened to on the tape from last week, is even in this situation, which for part of me was very safe and very fun, there was still this little niggling, oh my God, what if I go blank? Oh my God, what if I can't do this right? And then I just had to, I laughed at myself, but that came up even in a situation like this and brought back the whole idea of trying so hard to use correct MVC.
Yes. It is such a tragedy that so many people somehow get NVC through the lens of correctness. It's so much not in line with the deeper purpose of NVC, because in the world that we're trying to create with NVC, there's no right and wrong, remember? How can it be incorrect? What I want to focus on more than the idea of correct or incorrect is the awareness of the consequences of the language that we use. That's part of, I think, what frees people up from correct or incorrect. When we learn it as a thing that we're supposed to do, then all we can do is measure ourselves compared to some abstract standard. If we focus our attention on learning to discern what happens when we use this word or that word, then there is no right and wrong. Then we know internally why we're choosing to say something or another. So let me give you an example of what I mean. Let's say this piece about using observation rather than evaluation. Okay? Everybody who learns NVC learns it. The sad thing is most often we learn it without connecting with a why about it. Let's just take a quick moment, even though it's not entirely on topic, I think it will help. What's the value of doing an observation rather than evaluation? Why would you want to do that? What does it actually give you? What's the effect that it has? Have you thought about that?
Yes, I have. And what I've come up with is that focusing on the observation gives me a lot more clarity of what is actually happening in my life. It actually brings me to the present. It takes me out of this thing that's in my head. It takes me out of my story.
Okay, great. Now let's look at what effect does it have on the person hearing you when you focus on observation rather than evaluation?
It can do several things, as I've experienced. It can give them clarity.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to explain something to them. It can give them possibly a sense of ease because I wouldn't be using a blaming word, so it might calm them down. It might help them feel more comfortable.
Okay. So you know why you're using observations, and then there's nothing about correctness there. Then there is an effect that you're trying to create, and you have an awareness of what is more likely to create it. You see what I mean?
Yes.
You can do the same thing with each aspect of NVC. Like, why would you want to speak a feeling rather than a thought? I can answer that same question. I don't want to go through the whole thing because it's a different course. I'm just saying that as you do that, you free yourself from an abstract standard and mm-hmm. open yourself up to choice.
Thank you so much. That really clarified some things for me. It's a big help.
Wonderful. Really glad about that. Any other questions or comments? I'd like to hear also if people have, you know, like favorite lines that you came up with, something that you were really pleased that happened. A little bit more sharing.
What I'm feeling confused about, Mickey, is when we were going through the examples of how you might say something, and someone put it in a negative form. So is it because you really don't have whatever? So you suggested to focus on the positive. So with my partner in her first guess, she did the same thing.
The negative.
Exactly. So in a way, I feel like what I just did was what you're cautioning against, which is making a right and wrong from it. So I think what I would enjoy would be to explore with you really why it matters.
To use the positive, what
right.
we want rather than what we don't have?
Right.
Answer your own question. I have a sense that this is one of the core key transformational things that so many people miss around NVC is focusing on what we want rather than what we don't have.
Okay, so whatever it is, whatever the need, the energy of the need is always available and accessible. So saying it in a positive rather than a negative reminds me of that reality.
Okay, so that's one way of looking at it. Let's open it up to see what other people have to say about this. Why am I suggesting that we focus on what you or somebody else wants rather than on what need is not met?
It empowers me and plays it in my hands, whereas if I focus on what I don't want, then it's something external to me. I'm sort of the victim, and it's disempowering to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other aspect of it that is meaningful for you?
What I see as being useful, focusing on what you want, is because you're focusing on what you want, you're way more likely to get it, I guess,
mm-hmm.
or to understand it, rather than feeling like, oh, I'm lacking this, but not actually seeing how you're going to get there.
Uh-huh. To reframe what you're saying in just slightly different words, as soon as I know what I want, there is a movement that starts happening towards it. I still may not get it, but there's movement towards it. If I focus on what I don't have, you know, like if I say my need for love is not met versus saying I want to have love in my life, there's movement in saying I want to have love in my life. It starts moving towards creating love. Mm. If I say I don't have love in my life, then it closes within itself. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would just add, becoming more aware of how to become responsible for my own experience in life.
Uh-huh. And what does that give you? Why is that important for you?
When I have ownership of what happens and I'm able to affect what happens rather than being at the effect act, I'm able to be responsive rather than reactive.
Great. Thank you.
Nikki, you actually said what I wanted to say. It removes the resistance. It shifts the energy mm-hmm. to a solution rather than an unchangeable position of resistance to what is.
Okay, and as more people are speaking, I also want you to start looking at what is the effect on the other person that's with you to talk about what you want or what they want rather than what you or they don't have.
For me, focusing on what I want versus don't have brings more life force energy to the conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, I experience it energetically.
Mm-hmm. So I want to add to that that I don't know how it works. I think we're very, very young in our understanding of the inner workings of our mind. And I'm anticipating that if the human species stays on the planet long enough, we will eventually understand this. Empirically, what I have seen is that something changes internally when the focus is on wanting. It's almost like the brain starts believing the reality of the possibility, if we speak in terms of what we want. I still want to hear from people also what you imagine is the effect on another person that you're in conversation with when you make this shift, when you talk about what you want or what they want rather than what you or they don't have. What do you imagine is the effect on the other person? If you're not sure, then just imagine yourself in conversation with someone and then imagine that they say to you what they want or what they don't have and what effect it would have on you, and then you'll know.
I think it can be really stimulating to others when we come from a place of our own lack or stimulation around not mm-hmm. having what. So I think it can promote some peace. And I'm just curious, do you ever think there are times where you do just want to mirror or reflect back if somebody's in a spot that you just feel like that's what they want, you know, that's what would be most salve to their wounds, is just hearing how painful it is that they're not
Yes, it really depends on context. I almost have a visual sense that when somebody's in a lot of pain, the first thing they want is for somebody to catch them, and then, you know, kind of like they can sit on somebody's hand and be brought down into solidity on the ground, and then look at what they want. So yes, I can see context where that would be useful. Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
When you're saying that my need for love is not met versus I want to have love in my life, well, I see it as when you're in the positive, you're taking responsibility. I'm taking responsibility myself rather than making the other person feel responsible for having to make me happy.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the effect on the other person is it might be easier for them to hear when we speak in terms of what we want than in terms of what we don't have, because if we take responsibility, then they are free to just be with us instead of being triggered into it's their responsibility. I think that's what you were saying.
Exactly what I was saying. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, thank you.
I think that viewing it in the positive opens up possibilities. And in fact, it helped me to see what my partner and I in that exercise were struggling with in a new light. For example, something that my granddaughter considers a word that she doesn't want to ever hear from me again is connection. And I was realizing that my view of connection has been kind of negative, like I'm lacking connection. And when I began thinking, well, what is it I want? It's mutual understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so clear once I switched it around.
Yeah.
It's really interesting how after all these years trying to find something else besides that C word, my partner had another one. We were trying to think of what word it was that her mom might be yearning for, that was it safety or stability, because she was losing so many people in her life, and she had over time, and we were trying to kind of connect with that. Just thinking of the positive, I don't know if she would agree, but what I came up with was that she's really yearning for friendships and closeness, not just the negative, I'm going to lose somebody else.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm just reflecting in intimate relationships or in coupledom that it's one of the most intimate things I think you can do is to allow the other person to know what it is that you really want.
Yes.
Because it gives them a chance to meet that or not.
I like that. I kind of think of it that when I put out my needs and what I want in a positive term, whether it's an intimate relationship or not, it's more open to collaboration in trying to get the need met. If I talk about the need is not met because of that closeness of it, there isn't really room for movement and togetherness. Thank you. And you get the final word on this one.
What comes up for me is actually feelings that when I imagine putting out what I don't have, that might be more depressing or, you know, sad. And if they hear what I do want, it allows for hope and kind of excitement that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So I am really satisfied to hear all of this because I get a sense that I often get that we actually know these things. All we need to do is free ourselves up to ask ourselves the questions instead of being rote. I more and more am moving towards teaching the why rather than the how in NVC, and let the how emerge from the why. So with that, I feel ready to move to the activity that I have asked you to do at home. I would like to hear from people some reflections and comments about what you learned about different contexts in which you tried to apply this practice, this exercise of removing and highlighting need words and feeling words for different types of situations and what you learned from it. Anybody ready to open up this part of our conversation?
I did the exercise for 3 different contexts. The first one was the one that you suggested for work, and I found that really valuable just in terms of me recognizing what the values in the organization that I work for are. And then I did it for sort of 2 different groups of friends, and I noticed why I value the freedom that I feel in one context so much, because almost all of the words I went through, it seemed like they were sort of allowed, or they wouldn't necessarily trigger or close things off. Whereas in a different context, I really noticed which ones would trigger those feelings. I would just need to see what different values in different contexts were.
Yeah, so in other words, it gave you kind of like a mirror and a confirmation of the different experience of freedom and authenticity that you have in one group versus the other, because you can express yourself in the full range of your truth.
Precisely.
Yeah. So I'm curious, when you did this thing with your work and you got some deeper clarity about the values in your workplace, how do you imagine that will help you in your communication in your workplace?
I've actually been trying to implement NVC in my workplace, not explicit, sort of on a daily practice. And this exercise really helped, especially underlining the words that are effective in that context. And so recognizing that my workplace is really comfortable and encourages, you know, clarity and competence and consistency, effectiveness, recognizing those values, tying them to the certain words and the kind of language, I think is going to help me connect better with my coworkers and also sort of have more ease in implementing NVC there.
Mm-hmm. One of the related things is to recognize that whatever words are comfortable or allowed or not allowed in a certain context doesn't mean that the people don't have all the other needs too. Because all human beings have all the needs. It's just about being able to calibrate my language so that my speech is connecting for people rather than alienating. Once you make the connection, then oftentimes additional needs become allowed in that particular conversation, even if not generally speaking. Did that make sense?
That made a lot of sense, kind of clarified something which, just in terms of striking that balance, I like the idea that you can start out with testing how comfortable they are or using words that are really connecting in that context and then maybe move to something deeper.
Yeah, thank you.
I did something maybe a little different. I actually thought of a context I'm going to be going into. The university administration is what I was thinking of. And I'm getting ready to approach them about some NVC things. And the level of administrators will be higher up than I'm used to dealing with. And what I found myself doing was just imagining what words I might want to be careful with and words that I haven't heard used in context. What I started to recognize was that if I'm correct in this, I was wondering if words that aren't used because faculty or administration might perceive themselves as being put in a vulnerable position if they use these particular words, or they might be opening themselves up in a way that might lead to negative consequences in another way. And then I started to think, if I choose not to use those words, in other words, am I willing to put myself in that position if I'm talking to them by using some of these words, by opening myself up? In other words, I using them to them in terms of explaining myself as opposed to reflecting anything back that they might have said.
I'm really, really, really appreciating the quality of inquiry that you're on. Not because there is a right answer, just because I'm seeing you peeling off layers of fixed form, to really look at the key questions of what will or will not work in this conversation. I would say that as a general guideline, you are master of your own vulnerability. People may feel awkward or uncomfortable in relation to you choosing to expose your vulnerability. That's a fraction of the discomfort that they would have if you are, quote-unquote, forcing them to go to a place of vulnerability they never signed on to. I'm with you on this journey of exploring what it means and how you maintain your integrity as a human being. I can tell you, for example, that I just did something with two people of sending a follow-up email to people who didn't respond to me about something. And it's something that I really find so puzzling, the frequency with which people just don't respond. And so I usually just leave it alone. And I decided that I wanted to pursue it, and that meant exactly exposing a piece of some vulnerability of mine, explaining that I was following up not because I was trying to get them to say yes to whatever it was that I had asked them in my email that they didn't respond to, but because I really wanted to understand, that it was confusing for me and I wanted to understand and close the loop. And I felt really good about doing it. I knew I was doing something that is, you know, kind of like, quote unquote, not done. And I felt happy to have found the way to do it that felt authentic and caring. That's really what I aim for in these kinds of inquiries like you are on. It's always the question, what would be both authentic and caring? Did that speak to you?
Very much. It's given me some more things to think about also as I get ready to talk to these folks. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you. I want to create mixed groups for the next piece of practice. So I want to explain to you what I want you to do in the group. I want you to do some role plays in which you create a scenario, make up a scenario in your group in which it would be most relevant to use a need word that is one of the ones that are not allowed. In other words, where you have to find an alternative in order to be colloquial. So, for example, let's say that love is a need that is not allowed in whatever the context is that the person did the work for. And your task is to create a way of speaking about the need for love without speaking about the need for love, with using one of the need words that are allowed and comfortable in that context. Finding a way to provide the meaning in a way that is context sensitive. So I'd like to know if anybody has a question about what I'm asking you to do.
I did have a question about context. When I did the exercise, I used the context of friendships with people in my life because I work by myself, so I didn't really have a work environment, and I don't belong to that many different communities, so that was the only thing I could come up with. So would that be an acceptable context?
Sure, absolutely. The key is that I want you to work with that edge of where the most relevant need that appears to you to define what is happening is one that you can't use. How are you going to still express yourself or reflect? It doesn't really matter whether you create a scenario in which you have the forbidden need or whether you imagine another person has the forbidden need. I want you to work with doing the translation into something that is contextually relevant.
Thank you.
So I'm going to ask you to do this again for 10 minutes. And the whole time, I imagine you will work on at most two scenarios. And you will be doing a role play. And so when you do the role play, I would suggest that two of you engage in the role play and the third person kind of like gives you coaching about whenever it seems like you have dropped out of the context where they sense as imagine themselves in the context of the audience, and if it looks like you're saying something that would feel like NDC funny, they give you feedback about it and your whole group work together on finding a different way of saying it. And if you get to a second scenario, great. And if you don't, that is totally fine. Okay. I'll quote unquote see you again in a few minutes. Welcome back. I would like to hear from a few people how it was to do this role play and what you learned in the process of doing it.
What happened in our group, it was really interesting. So her context was if you were meeting a new acquaintance and the feelings and needs were heartbreak, anguish, and mourning that we were taking out of it. And I was trying to role play with her, so she was just like, hi, Joan, you know, nice to meet you. How are you? And I was really struggling with being able to be authentic with showing up, being heartbroken, anguished, and mourning, and not being able to express that in some way. It was a real, real, real big struggle for me. Like, I don't know that if I was meeting someone new, I would really feel comfort or ease around expressing that I was really in that state. So I really struggled.
Yes, you probably wouldn't.
Yeah,
probably
I wouldn't. I would not.
Yes, you would not express it. But because we're human, you would kind of like give out clues. You know, you might say something like, you know, my husband just died, but I'm hanging in there. You know, I'm doing all right, you know, all things considered.
Yeah, I kept going for feelings and needs, and it just sounded so awkward. I was going for other...
Okay, what you would do if you were trying to express yourself in NVC without using heavy-duty words and
right.
Be authentic.
That's and how we were taking the action.
Got it. Did you land anywhere that felt...
I don't think so. We were getting help from the coach, but I don't really feel like I was landing. I mean, I said stuff, but it was, then all of a sudden I went, I would never say that to anyone. You know, I said something, and then I realized, like, there's no way I would have really said that.
So the key is to find a way to say something that you would say.
Yeah, and that was hard. So by being able to say, like, oh, I'm doing okay despite the fact that my husband died, or... finding a way that is authentic that may not be expressing feelings or needs might just be your story.
It might be. Did you come up with anything?
Our coach helped, and I actually would prefer that. Dee, if you don't mind, would you step up? I'm wanting support.
Okay. I just said something about when she was asked about how she was doing, just to say, you know, I'm having trouble being present with you right now. I appreciate getting a chance to meet you, and I would enjoy a chance to connect with you, but right now I'm a little overwhelmed with my own experience. Something like that. I just tried to express,
yes.
You know, that it was difficult.
Yes, and I can imagine that somebody could accept that. What about you?
Yeah, I think actually I was trying too hard to use NVC.
Yes. Okay. Release that.
Yeah. I guess. Thanks.
Thank you.
I found that I really understood what a gap there is if we don't say anything. My tendency has been not to express myself, just to be in the empathy mode all the time, protecting myself. This exercise really helped me to see that if there is that silence, then a whole lot is missing. It's huge. The need that we were working with autonomy, trying to figure out ways of acknowledging it in a child in colloquial language, but also especially in how to express our need for it when we need it ourselves. And when that wasn't happening, I could see that somebody could just go off and do their own thing without saying anything, which would be much harder on the listener than being told, you know, I really need some space here. It really matters to me to get doing something that I need to do right now. Gee, it really freed me up listening to that.
Uh-huh. Thank you. And you get the final word today.
We found it hard to do a role play because I've not really talked to the administrators before. Mm-hmm. And so coming up with a situation was a struggle for us. And we finally came up with a word of belonging to leave it off the table. And what I found was that I had the same experience that the first person who responded did. It was still that, it's right, still haunting me. Hoping to let go of that. And also, one just real life thing was, I'm not sure I'm ready to talk to these administrators yet. And I don't know what kind of preparation that I might need to do, but just,
it almost became
an exercise in clarity, in being clear to them and really succinct.
Yes. Here is what I would suggest you do for preparation, not right now. What I would suggest you do is try to be them. Just imagine being them and then run to yourself all the lines that you would want to say and how would it feel to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So we are getting ready to close and I just would like to hear from two or three people. What's something that stands out to you from today that was meaningful for you or that you learned or that you're excited about or want to apply?
One thing that really stuck out for me was that seeing NVC through the lens of correctness is not necessarily in line with the world that we're actually trying to create with NVC, and that it's an effect that you're trying to create and not an abstract standard.
Oh, thank you. Anybody else? What stands out to you? What did you enjoy today?
I enjoyed that I can see a glimpse of light that with more practice, that I can learn this way of doing it, just like I learned my original language of NVC, mm-hmm. and that it's just a matter of practice, and I'll get it down, and it'll be natural. Just to forget about the rules. Forget about the rules.
Amen.
One thing that I really am taking away from this evening is how important it is to get feedback before, or at least to have a partner to share with sometimes, because it can feel overwhelming doing what we're doing, which is creating a new way to relate. It was nice for us to share ideas. I really enjoyed having partners to share ideas with.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.